We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go!
Afternoons on the Score.
You buying George and Tim Grover and Michael Jordan's story that it was bad pizza?
And the pizza came, there was four or five guys outside the door.
Five guys delivering one pizza.
Something makes me giggle just hearing him talk about pizza, though.
I eat the pizza all by myself. Nobody else eats it. Eat the pizza.
Eat the pizza.
He was talking about it like it was a conquest, like over Gary Payton.
I had no problem with the pizza. I had a lot of pizza on my mind.
What self-respecting room full of guys lets one guy eat an entire pizza?
Pizza.
Well, I'm making dinner.
Oh, okay. I'll just put it in the fridge. It's even better the next day. Huh?
That's what I'm saying. No one else has any pizza. It's a full pizza the night before an NBA Finals game.
Let me know when you're going to be at the Howard Street Inn again. And we'll I'll come by and we'll chew on a pizza or something.
It's on me.
Huh?
Robert Chief didn't have any. Luke, Ron Hopper, myself.
So he spat on the pizza so that nobody else could eat it.
I eat the pizza all by myself. Nobody else eats it. Eat the pizza.
You spit on the pizza?
She used to spit on her own floor. That never made any sense to me.
What is he doing?
Did anyone order me a plain cheese?
Well, yeah, we did. But if you want any, somebody's going to have to barf it all up because it's gone.
Pizza story has layers.
That's right. Call it a stuffed pizza.
They're baked in.
Oh. I didn't like either of those jokes.
You make this pizza? This pie was found at a crime scene. My pizza never hurt nobody.
I ate the pizza all by myself. Nobody will eat. Eat the pizza.
Can you leave some for us?
Lay off me, I'm starving.
Yo, saddle up, lock and load.
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
All of a sudden, I find myself craving some pizza. But guys, I would share it with you all via virtual social distancing, of course, in these unprecedented times.
Yeah, have a virtual slice. I've been craving pizza since Pizzagate was revisited Sunday night and again on our show all day yesterday as well. And just speaking in Jordan speak, as has been my want for the last few weeks, especially the last few days, I think I'm going to order one tonight, even though I bought some good meats at the grocery store the other day. I bought some nice pork steaks, and I've got a real nice-looking T-bone in there that was grass-fed, but I think I got to eat the pizza tonight. No one's going to spit on it, though. No spattage on my pie, please.
It would be a weird thing for you to spit on your own pizza if you're just ordering it to your house and not sharing it. It's.
I saw somebody spit on food in a movie this morning, as a matter of fact. Pesci's brother in Casino, Dominic, in the restaurant business, spit on a sandwich that he was serving to cops. He was giving a cops a to-go bag, and he spit on it.
That's one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie, Mac.
Oh, I love that it. Is. And he loogied. He went deep for that one. He tickled the cilia in his, is that the trachea or the esophagus? I think the trachea, yeah, the esophagus is for food and beverage. He hawked up on the sandwich, and it was disgusting, and I immediately thought of Jordan and the pizza. And the fun we had with his pizza yesterday, and Pizzagate continues today.
It does. We have new information on Pizzagate, which we will get to in a second. But look at you already consuming Goodfellas this morning. That's or not Goodfellas. Excuse me, Casino. Casino. Why? Whatever.
Yeah, I got Casino. I did a Robert De Niro double dip beginning at 2:30 this morning because I made the mistake of falling asleep early last night, and I can't stay prone for more than 6 hours comfortably. So I was up at 2:30 with my first pot of coffee of the day. And I watched Midnight Run, followed by Casino. By 7
De Niro
o'clock.
Has the personality of a doorknob, you know, yep. So he's worthless.
That's right, big guy.
Worthless.
He's worthless. Very few comedies do I find De Niro outstanding in. Midnight Run is among them. I don't love his comedic films, but that's a real good one. That's my favorite of the bunch.
Not a fan of Analyze This?
I like Analyze This. I do. That also is on the list. I didn't like Analyze That, and I thought the meat, the fill-in-the-blanks were very, very average, and I thought Grudge Match was an embarrassment to his career, even though there were some parts of the movie I found compelling. Maybe Kim Basinger had something to do with that. I don't know.
I think it probably did for you. Yeah. I would say Meet the Parents is hysterical to me. I absolutely loved that movie. I remember laughing my face off in that theater. I don't know if it had something to do with my cousin was a nurse, and she was married to a male nurse, and we saw the movie together, and it was just absolutely hysterical, line by line by line. I loved that movie.
Hey, what about Dirty Grandpa?
We missed
206,
that one.
And we haven't mentioned Dirty Grandpa yet.
I think I went to the theater for that one.
Oh,
that
was, no.
Yes, I did. You got to remember. I take Patrick to the movies 20 times a year, maybe more. So popcorn's always good. Milk Duds, if I get them, always good. So I'll go see bad De Niro movies. Why not?
A double De Niro feature before 7:30 in the morning is quite an accomplishment, Matt.
Yeah, like, that's good, isn't it?
How much coffee are you going to need today to get through the day?
The third pot. Sherry just put the third pot on a little while ago. Yeah, so, but no, okay. I'm running on adrenaline, man. I'll just pretend like I had bad pizza last night and grind my way through it and get a towel and wipe myself down if I get that way during breaks. I don't think I will, though, because I'm pumped for today's show. On
Come on, make
42.
That coffee to go. Let's go.
Of quarantine. 42s, of course, Chicago. Sid Luckman, a 42 of note. Ron Kittle, my guy, naked biker. And nationally, I think 42s, you start the list with Jackie Roosevelt Robinson and then maybe Ronnie Lott of the San Francisco 49ers. Would be a notable 42. Day 42 of Scorantine. We are more than halfway to 83, I realized this morning. Halfway there. That's right. Will we get to 83?
I hope not. But if we do, we got to have a big plan show for it. We have to do something intergalactically stupid and the stupid and futile gesture on someone's part. Maybe that's the day that we can get the sign for Dan Plesak. It can be erected in Crown Point.
Well, we know a Rookie of the Year award winner from that year of
83.
Who we just mentioned earlier. Danny, who are we talking about?
Ron Kittle?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay, I was
right,
wondering if
you're right.
There's a trick question component. Okay, yeah, we can put him on. So just all things 83 on the 83rd day of quarantine. I'm on board. The show's done dumber things than that.
Yeah, Jeff Samardzija was in 83. We're trying to get Samardzija on the show. He's been laying in the weeds. He's not been responsive. I'd love to get Sammy, or do you prefer Shark?
I like Shark.
You like Shark. I know a lot of people. I like Sammy. I know that what nickname, it's not a nickname, it's his name, already was taken in Cubs history.
Exactly.
But I like Sammy. Most of his high school buddies referred to him as Sammy, so he's Sammy to me. But he's in 83 when he was in South Bend. He didn't wear that number in baseball, but when he was catching Brady Quinn passes.
That's right.
And I thought the two of them were going to be sizzling pros. I really had high expectations for that tandem at the NFL level. And Samardzija would have been an early second-round pick had he gone that direction. Some thought even late first round because of his size.
Captains of attitude.
Anyway, an 83. Willie Gault was an 83. Let's get him on if we do 83.
Let's do it. Let's start planning the show now. Even if we're in the studio, there will still be weird things. We can do what would have been the 83rd quarantine show. I don't know if sports are or are not back. We'll make it happen for today's show. Yeah, we've got an interesting guest list today. Antoine Walker at 3 o'clock. I'm very excited about this. He has a very unique relationship with Michael Jordan. He kind of found himself in Jordan's like entourage and crew around the time of Jordan's second comeback with the Wizards, because he was one of his point men for organizing these secret workouts in Chicago with Chicago NBA players, Chicago college basketball players, to get Jordan ready for his comeback with the Wizards. Mm-hmm. And the stories of these scrimmages, like it's a young LeBron James before he comes into the NBA, Penny Hardaway, Michael Finley, Antoine Walker, Juwan Howard, Michael Jordan. And so he's going to tell stories about that coming up at 3 o'clock today.
That's pretty cool. That's good stuff. I like your angle. That's really good.
Yeah, he's just, you know, and Mount Carmel kid, you know, sure. Chicagoan, looked up to Jordan. So their paths have crossed in a couple of different ways, and they became friendly off the court. So I'm looking forward to hearing what Antoine Walker is willing to share at 3 o'clock today. Hub Arkish at 4 o'clock. I got to come up with a football theory to run by him. I don't have a great one today, Mac. I got to be honest with you.
We've got a couple hours to figure it out. I mean, we've got a little bit of time for you. I don't know. I mean, NFL camps were green-lighted today. I don't know if there's any meat in there for you to come up with a thesis. NFL camps are opening on a skeleton crew basis today, if it's okay, if states have reopened where that NFL team resides. 160 miles south of me, where I'm talking to you from right now, the Indianapolis Colts reopened their doors today. The only people allowed in are rehabbing players at this point. But it'd be hard for somebody to convince me that coaches don't break rules. And, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people already have been at work on a secret basis and maybe working weird hours to not be seen. I don't know. I mean, that's just how NFL people are. The NFL has been more than any league determined to continue business as usual. So I have no reason to believe why coaches aren't expecting, you know, having that thirst to, because they look at it as behind schedule right now. Mini camps and OTAs, that's religion to those guys. Whether it actually pays off in September, we've mocked that over the years, as we discussed in our pre-show meeting today. But those guys swear by it or they wouldn't do it, and they wouldn't put so much into it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, there was already stuff of, you know, Brady in Tampa working out with guys and breaking rules, and the NFL's not going to crack down on these guys for violating social distance mandates, but... You know, Ben Roethlisberger said he wasn't going to shave until he could throw to any of his teammates. And then he put a video out there of him clean shaven. So the NFL is starting to open. Sports are, frankly, getting ready to open, which is awesome if they can pull it off safely. And we'll kind of go through this experiment together, it seems like. And I think we're going to have the attempt at team sports sooner than later. Whether we'll get to the conclusion of these seasons, that's another story. But it does look like we're going to get most of these leagues up and running. And in celebration of Dan Bernstein's 25th anniversary at The Score, we're not going to put Dan Bernstein on. We're going to put his longtime producer, Matt Abaticola, on the show today at 4:45 to tell some behind-the-scenes stories of Dan Bernstein, 4:45 today.
That's really good. It's been ages since I've had a chance. We text every now and again, and I see him on Twitter, or on, you know, he doesn't do Facebook. I see him on Twitter, but I have not had him on the air in quite some time. It'd be fun to talk with him. He's got lots of thoughts, I'm sure. 25 years at one radio station is a remarkable thing, and it's also very, very rare when somebody stays employed at a radio station, either on the station's volition or one's own decision to try something different. So that's, I couldn't imagine 25 years without shuffling shoes a few times. But that's just, you know, that's why there's vanilla and that's why there's chocolate. Some call it stability. He certainly has done that. He was a Ron Gleason find back in 95, immediately established himself as a terrific in the field reporter, and was given opportunities to host on a fill-in basis and do some weekend stuff and evenings, and immediately excelled. And in the summer of 99, got his first show with Boers between 8 and noon. So congratulations to Dan Bernstein. What do you get for 25 years?
It's not a gold watch.
It's not a gold watch.
You're wrong.
It's a chance to come back tomorrow morning and do another show. That's what your reward is.
That's right. The airtime between 9 and noon, the Dan Bernstein show here on The Score. But 25 years is incredible. And so we kid because we love, but Matt Abatacola kids. Maybe because he loves. I'm not sure. We'll find out.
I don't
today.
Know anything about Abella Danger. I assume it's Danger and it's not like Danger.
Yeah. Danger. Danger would be the last name. And then Jerry Reinsdorf spoke. Mm-hmm. Mac found the lost poem, the burnt poem from Michael Jordan. Very much looking forward to that at 3:30 today. And you going to buy some pizza for a listener today? Is that a goal?
I'll buy the pizza. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's have some fun. Let's not wait until to a Friday for a, what do you call that, Danny Parkins? Is that a feel good Friday fung? What is that?
Friday. Yeah. Why does fun have to only happen on Fridays? That doesn't seem right.
We're opening up fun on Tuesday today. If you think you can do a Michael Jordan impersonation, we're going to give you a couple of opportunities to take a whack at it. And the best of the bunch, by the time we're done with it, whether we take three or four of them or 12 or 15 of them by the day's conclusion, we'll send you a pizza. I'll buy you a pizza. And you, okay. I'm not going to have any of your pizza. Like Jordan, you can hog it. It can be all your pizza. You don't have to spit on it. It can be from whatever your favorite pizzeria is. You know, if you're in the city and you want to go with your favorite city, that's fine. If you want Aurelio's, it's the sauce. That would be my choice on a thin crust. But whatever you like.
It's very generous of you. But the only we have to judge that it's good, right? Like, so you gotta call up with a Michael Jordan impression.
Mm-hmm.
And if we as a mob deem it to be a good impression, you'll buy them pizza. Because I'm thinking
all by myself. Nobody else eats. Eat the pizza.
It's all yours. Pretend you're Jordan.
I'm thinking that you might be keeping your money in your pocket today, because it's gonna be tough for the audience to come up with a good Jordan.
Well,
impression.
If your post game, if you will, if your Last Dance post game show calls are any indication, I'm sure our audience is up for the challenge.
That's right. Okay, you're right. I stand correct.
You know what the equivalent of it would be? If it's going to be like your post-game show for The Last Dance Sunday night, Parkins did 80 minutes after. It would be someone calling to do an impersonation of Jordan after never having heard him speak. That would have to be it, because he's asking for calls on the documentary, and he's got three yo-yos who didn't watch any of it.
Yeah, three of the nine calls that I took did not watch the documentary. That's right. Or someone calling up and doing an impression of Sammy Sosa. Or, you know, Horace Grant, some other 90s Chicago athlete. Yeah.
So it was George, myself, Tim, and I think a couple of security guys.
Yeah, think doing lists of names. That's a Jordan staple. It's easier to sound like Jordan when you run down a list of names. And always at slot number three or four, include myself.
Of course, that is key. Don't give away too many tips here, because then it's just going to become everybody doing Will Ferrell's impression of Harry Carey, and by three or four iterations of it, we'll get like the Ryan Dempster one. And so now this is going to just be people doing impressions of you doing impressions of Jordan.
I don't want it to be the worst thing we've ever tried. I don't want it to top Marlins, man.
That's not possible.
Yeah, well, it is. It is. You know,
we like taking swings. We might set a new. Oh God, I don't know what just happened there. Might set a new bar for low, high. I don't know, but we're gonna try it. We're gonna take a swing. What could go wrong?
Yeah, it's just our careers.
Yeah, that.
It's being nice. It's giving back. I'll buy you a pizza today.
Okay.
That's Lawrence Levy, a.k.a. Marlins Man.
So many of those people who sit down there, and I've been going there for about, like I said, 4 years, wrote to me today and thanked me. It's kids, it's old people, it's blacks, it's whites, it's Orientals, it's everybody. Anybody who's a baseball fan.
Danny, what do I have to pay you to burn that tape? It's not even tape.
No,
what
it's do never, I have to do? It hasn't been taped since you've been in the business, I don't think.
It just makes
my skin
crawl.
Have you ever dealt with tape
crawl.
Ever? You've never had tape in front of you.
I just wish there wasn't like a way where people could rewind it over and over again on their app and just keep reliving it. I only have to play it one time. I don't have to play it multiple times for people to enjoy it.
It just makes my skin crawl in the absolute worst of ways.
Is but that the worst? Is that the bottom for us? In two years and change? Probably.
What else is in the team photo? Mount Rushmore of bad? Like, what else have we done? Tanny probably has a running list.
I remember the I don't think it was so much it came out on the air as bad as it felt when we did it, but the remote we did before Bears and Cowboys this past season on Thursday night was just a technical nightmare. We had issues with a couple of headphone amplifiers and microphone. They weren't synced up very, very well. And I think two of the positions, you had to ride it yourself manually the entire day. And there was a technical glitch or two on our end, maybe. And I was distracted a time or two. But I don't think what came out on the air was flat out awful. A texter suggesting Yasmani Grandal. In 15, 17 minutes of sometimes, you know, fingers down the chalkboard, it wasn't that bad. It was just uncomfortable because we weren't connecting. But some gems that come out of it for the betterment of the show long term, the oh no. That was natural, and here we go, stuck in broadcast hell, pulling sentences out of young jocks' mouths for the next 10 minutes. But I give you credit. I did at the time, too, for just continuing to try to bang away. I was ready to be just done with
different,
that.
Different inroads to see if you could find, just like a little grain of a morsel of interesting. And I think that, see, that it was absolutely worth it because we got your oh no out of it.
That's oh no! Yeah, the oh no!
And people saying like when we did movie reviews with Kenny Lofton when he had the film thing that he was promoting, I would disagree because him not getting the Matrix reference that I gave to him was I loved that moment.
Like, 6-time All-Star, 4-time Gold Glover, and now he's trying his hand at the film game. Kenny Lofton joins us on The Score. So, all right, Kenny Lofton, the film buff. You know what are some of your favorite movies?
You know what? I think my main one is, some off the top of my head, you just kind of caught me off of that one. The Matrix, again, because of the special effects.
I know Kung Fu.
Yeah. Oh, you know Kung Fu?
No, it's a line in The Matrix.
Oh, the line. Okay.
I can't help myself anymore. I laugh at stupidity on mic anymore. I'm just, if you're not hanging with us, man, then you ain't it. That was so funny to me.
Yeah, me too.
He's in the movie business, and he can't think of a movie off the top of his head that he loves. What the hell are you? Come on.
And then the most famous line from his favorite movie.
Right.
Why would I be telling Kenny Lofton that I know Kung Fu? It's a ridiculous thing to say.
Oh, you know Kung Fu. Yeah, that was, but that's so funny, though.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't even be in my top 100. Like, because I have no problem with awkward. I have no problem with taking a swing and missing. But Marlins Man, it was a bad idea. It was bad execution. He was bad on the air. And he said Orientals. Like it just
and he wasn't talking about floor coverings, right?
Yeah, it was a walk off grand slam of a bad radio idea. So feel free to keep texting in low moments of the McNeil and Parkin show. That'll pick up my mood on this 42nd day of scoring.
The Lacey Underall interview, says a texter, and he's blaming us. He said neither of us were listening to each other or the guest. I don't, you know, okay. I don't mean to be overly sensitive to the criticism, but I thought she came in with a preconceived notion of things she wanted to do, and she was the one who wasn't really participating, and she was trying to direct things in a certain way, and it was all right. Would I do it again? No, probably not. I wouldn't want to talk to her again, I don't think.
Yeah, we did it once.
We tried it.
Once was enough. Once was enough. But Shep, Tanny, feel free to come up with your submissions for the worst thing on this show. We probably have enough time left in today's program.
It might be Jordan's poem today, for all we know. That may be a flat-out flop. You know,
it could be.
It could be, right.
It could be. Yeah, 3:30 coming up later today. Michael Jordan's burnt poem as composed by Dan McNeil. But all right, coming up next, they found the guy who claims to make the pizza. He made the pizza when Jordan ate the pizza. And his recollection of the night in question is remarkable. We will relive it through his eyes and ears together next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
On the score.
I eat the pizza. All by myself. Nobody else eats. Eat the pizza.
I make the pizza.
Yes! Found the person who made the pizza that Jordan ate, the pizza. We're going to hear from him in just a minute. It's McNeil and Parkins on the score. Antoine Walker will tell Michael Jordan stories at 3 o'clock. I disagree with the vast majority of the submissions on the text line, Mac, for the worst moment of our show, especially the last Eli Hershkovich interview when we weren't listening to him about when he was leaving.
That might have received the most reaction at 670-11. I think more people texted that than anything.
But it was memorable, and it produced a great drop.
Yeah, it did. And we both, we're not above criticizing ourselves and making fun of ourselves. We both felt like idiots that neither of us heard him.
Yeah, so moving to Philadelphia at the end of the month.
When do you leave?
I leave at the end of the month.
When you leave?
About a month.
It's not good.
Now that's separated by about 9 minutes.
Yeah, right. 9 whole minutes. Nick Shepkowski, our executive producer, he can be an authority on how bad we are. What was our low moment in your mind, Shep?
I think my low moment for us was, it was actually something that I recommended we try and do. And the premise was, I forget who the rookie was on the Red Sox, hit 2 World Series home runs the night before. I was like, oh, let's get the last Red Sox player to do that on the show. That was Bernie Carbo, and Bernie Carbo went full Jesus mode on us.
I didn't mind the Jesus mode with Carbo as much as I minded the long-windedness and not being very good at specifics.
Talking.
Yes. I mean, he's on to promote recovery from addiction. That's his angle. I don't remember what was he. Was he with some organization or mental health aware? I don't remember what he was selling. He had something he'd sold in the past, and I think he still had a program that he was involved with. But for somebody who's in that field and has been in the rooms, as they say, you've told your story a bunch, and it's a dark one, and that's what you're there to do, to try and make yourself relatable to somebody else who's finding a very, very uncomfortable basement right now. And he was incapable of communicating that in any way at all that was vivid or emotional. It was a lot of verbosity is what it was. And so that bothered me more than the God part of it.
Yeah, he wouldn't go back to the bad parts before he had gotten clean, and often that's what makes the story of getting clean so relatable and hit home. Like, here was my rock bottom, here's how I came back from it. He wasn't willing to go back to that place, and we kind of hit a standstill in that conversation. But yeah, those are, like, to me, I like taking a shot. That's exactly right.
A lot of bad athlete interviews. I mean, a lot of them are,
yeah.
Frankly. We had high hopes for Allen Robinson, and that weekly was a tall order. It is for most current athletes a tall order to be interesting every week.
Yeah, especially when the season isn't going very well. So keep texting them in, low moments from the show. Don't even exactly remember how they got there, but like you said, maybe it'll be the Michael Jordan poem coming up at 3:30 today that we think we found. So the idea of the pizza being poisoned. The big show with Jake Scott Mack, 1280 The Zone in Salt Lake City. They found the man who claimed that he made the pizza, and he tells the story with such vivid attention to detail that I'm not going to be one to question him. I just have questions on why it took this long for him to clear his name when there had been talk about food poisoning for a long, long time. But let's get we have the story of the man who ate the pizza all by himself. Now let's
get
the story.
Pizza. All by myself. Nobody else eats. Eat the pizza.
I eat the pizza. So now let's get the story of the man who make the pizza.
I make the pizza. We obviously won't name the company that I was working for, but I hear about the late night stuff, and it was 2:00 in the morning, all those kind of things. It was towards the evening that we got a call, and our delivery guys were, everybody up in Park City was aware of where the bowls were. They'd already been up there for, 3 or 4 days. So when you're working in the restaurant business up there, you obviously know what's going on. When something big like that's going on, you know who where they're at. So we went ahead, and the guy all of a sudden motioned me over because he knew I was the only Bulls fan in the store. I had bets, wagers, I should say, with everybody in the store on it. And so he comes over and he goes, hey, I think it's the Bulls. And he goes, I don't know why, but if I heard so-and-so correct, and I can't remember who he was speaking with, but someone that worked over at the Marriott, he goes, it might be, one of the players. Okay, good. I said, you know what? I had just started there about 3 or 4 weeks early. I'd been hired as an assistant manager. And I go, oh, well, I'm delivering it. In fact, I may have been the manager on duty and shouldn't have left the store. I don't know. I could have gotten in trouble for that. But I was like, hey, I will make the pizza. And I remember saying this, I will make the pizza because I don't want any of you doing anything to it. And I said, and then I told the driver, I said, you're going to take me there. It'll be my first delivery. And I was like, oh. So I go ahead and I make the pizza, and for everyone's wondering what he ate. And I've been telling this to everybody. It was a large, thin and crispy, extra pepperoni pizza. So I went ahead, I made the pizza, and I kind of geeked out a little bit watching. I was making sure that it didn't, it didn't puff up. It was a good pizza because, of course, it's for Michael. So I've got I had no idea at the time it was for Michael, but I had to, you assume it's for someone up there. And so I went ahead and we made the pizza, went and cooked it and got in there. And so we went ahead and hopped in with the driver and we head over to where they were staying. Everybody knows they were staying at the base of in Park City at the Main Street down where the Marriott had just been built. It wasn't too old at that time. So from there, you have to go in through security. And so and I'll be nice since I'm on the radio, since the crap story that the guy said that there were five people, there was two of us, and I didn't even have that many people working at the time at the store, but there was only two of us. You had police car, if I remember correctly, being parked in there, and you had to identify yourself. We're dressed in all of our uniforms. Both of us are in uniform, and it's clear where we're coming from. Walk in, security guy looks at us, says, great, go ahead, going in. So I go ahead, and obviously the pizza has basically never left me. It's been around me the whole time. And so we get into there, and as soon as you walk into the room or into the building, you could start to smell the cigar smoke. And we get in onto the elevator and go up. It was on the second or third floor. I think it was the second floor. Anyway, we get up there, and boy, as soon as that door opened, it felt like got punched in the face with cigar smoke. But there were guys walking around, and one of the players, I want to say it was one of the players, and forgive me, guys, this was quite a few years ago, but I remember one of the players saying, oh, hey, pizza. And they, who's that for? And I said, I don't know. It's room, and I can't remember the room number, but I said, it's room this. And they went, oh, for Mike. Oh, leave it alone. And then they went on, and thanks, man, or whatever. So we go over, and I knock on the door. And then this great guy who's been saying all this crap lately, I'm sure he's a good guy. But anyway, he answers the door, barely opens up the door, and looks out. And I said, hey, identify the company I was with, and here's the pizza delivery. And he goes, okay, hold on. And then he shuts the door. And then he goes ahead, and from there he, you know, he obviously got some money, and I forget, the pizza cost like $15 or something like that. And he opens up the door, he kind of hands me $20. This time he opens the door up a little bit more, and I can hear some commotion going in there. And he hands me the $20 and made a gesture to me. He said, you know, hey, you obviously keep the change or whatever. And I'm handing him the pizza, and I said, hey, can I at least say hi to Mike? You know, why not? It's my one shot, right? And the door kind of opens up a little bit more. Mike's in the room sitting at the chair. He's playing cards or whatever, and raises his hand. He said, thanks, man. And then the guy looked at me and shut the door, and that's the extent of the whole story. I, of course, go back, and everyone's giving me, oh, hey, way to go, whatever. And did you see him? And, you know, tell the story from there. And then the next day, I had the day off because the game, because that was, if I remember correctly, it was a Tuesday night, I think. And then they played Wednesday night, if I remember right. And so I had that night off because I was going to watch the game. And, of course, Bob Costas comes up and says that he got food poisoning from pizza or whatever. So I said some colorful words. And, of course, you know, the funny thing about this whole scenario is my son's named after Michael Jordan. So it's kind of funny. But anyway, so that's the basic story of what happened.
So, okay, so and there was no indication for any of the ingredients that you put on that pizza that there was anything tainted, poisoned, bad in any way, shape,
no. Well, I would tell you this. We obviously delivered lots of, not lots of pizzas, but enough up in Park City at that time frame because there were lots of people still up there. And so we delivered more than enough pizzas. And, of course, when this whole thing happened, I got called by the district manager saying, okay, if one guy got sick, how many others are we going to have to deal with? And there were no other reports. Nobody else got sick. In fact, later on, a few years later, I had talked to a few people that had gotten pizza that night, too, and who knows how much truth's in it, but they're like, no, it was fine. Plus, it's a thin crisp pepperoni pizza. It's tough to get food poisoning off of pizza unless, of course, obviously you add something to it, but that didn't happen because it sure as heck didn't leave my hands.
No, you're hesitant to do it, but can you tell us the name of the company we're working for?
Well, I hesitate just because I don't know what. I have no problem telling it. I've told everybody. I it was Pizza Hut.
Yes.
Wow. What there a big reveal at the end.
Yeah, if the host is listening, he knows the name of the product. Maybe he doesn't eat at Pizza Hut, but Thin and Crispy is a specific type of pizza at Pizza Hut. It's theirs. It's theirs, and I support Jordan's choice of the double pepperoni Thin and Crispy. That's. I like their sausage. It's what you probably call rabbit turd sausage, but it's an acquired taste, I think. But thin and crispy.
Sausage?
Yeah, it's crumbly. It's not the chunk sausage.
Gotcha.
It's rabbit turd sausage. Yeah.
A
rodent that's very popular
it's like
suburbs.
A ferret or a pheasant.
Gets in your tomato garden and destroys flowers and things like.
So it's a spider more than it is a snake.
So what do you think of Pizza Man? You buying?
Well, a couple of things. A lot of detail in his story. Shocked I have never heard of this man before. Like, there was ample opportunity for him to tell his story before The Last Dance came out. It's not like there hadn't been the allegation publicly of the bad pizza and the food poisoning. I buy that he's a Bulls fan, and it'd be very easy to verify if his kid was named Michael or Jordan, named after MJ. So I don't think that if this pizza was intentionally tampered with, I don't believe that this person is the man who did it. In telling of the story, early on he said it was for Michael, but then caught himself and was like, but I didn't know that at the time. That was a little odd. And then why would Tim Grover and George, the bodyguard confidant, why would they say there were five people at the door if there were two of them?
I don't know. Maybe it helped sell the story that he got something weird was going on.
But that makes me think that he was hungover, or it was something they're using the scapegoat of the pizza.
Right, that's what I'm implying. Yeah, that there was. Although I don't remember at the time us learning of five guys delivering a pizza. But if they wanted to keep that clean 22 years after the fact. That's one way to do it. Make up some way that sounds like food poisoning is absolutely legit. Five guys showed up with a pizza, and Mike was the only one who ate it. That's easy to sell that story, I guess. They thought
I
it
eat
was
the pizza anyway. All by myself. Nobody else eats. Eat the pizza.
I make the pizza.
He said, "I make the pizza 100 times in that story. I made the pizza. I make the pizza. I make the pizza. I'm making the pizza. Make the pizza." So, guy says he made the pizza.
I am going to add the article before pizza anytime I use pizza in the future. The pizza in the future. I'm just not going to say we're just going to get to. I'm going to order the pizza. I don't want just pizza. I want to eat the pizza. I'm going to add the before pizza forever, just to pay an homage to the salvation that has been The Last Dance for 5 weeks.
Okay. Well, you can let us know whether or not you believe the pizza man from Salt Lake City, who was reticent to all these years later to reveal that it was a Pizza Hut that he worked at, or if you're buying the five guys got up to Michael Jordan's room in the team hotel story. I got to be honest with you. I think I'm on team pizza man on this side. It doesn't make any sense that five guys could have gotten to Michael Jordan's hotel room before the NBA Finals with pizza. It's a fatal flaw in Michael Jordan's story. Antoine Walker will join us at 3 o'clock. I got a quote from Jerry Reinsdorf we got to pass along. It's McNeil and Parkins on the score.
Let me play you. This is Jerry Reinsdorf saying why he had to break the team up.
Reinsdorf?
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear this. I've never understood. We've never had any dialogue about why. I've made my own assumptions why.
Now, after the sixth championship, things were beyond our control.
Because it would have been suicidal at that point in their careers to bring back Pippen, Steve Kerr, Rodman.
So it was George, myself, Tim, and I think a couple of security guys.
So that's obviously from The Last Dance. We'll talk to Antoine Walker. He's got incredible Michael Jordan stories in 10 minutes. And we can get more into this quote from Jerry Reinsdorf a little bit later on. But shout out to Casey Johnson. I said on Twitter yesterday, and I'll say it here on the air, he's put on a masterclass in journalism and beat reporting throughout the Last Dance documentary. Everybody in the sports universe has been talking about Michael Jordan in The Last Dance and trying to find unique angles. He has been publishing Jerry Krause's side of the story from his unpublished memoir with the permission of the Krause family, which has added context to the stories as the episodes have come out. And then after The Last Dance airs, and a lot of us are feeling like there was something lacking from Jerry Reinsdorf in the documentary, he gets an interview with Jerry Reinsdorf. So shout out to Casey Johnson, who was on with Dan Bernstein earlier today. In response to how Reinsdorf felt about that scene when Michael Jordan said they had never talked and heard his side of the story, this is what Reinsdorf said. "I was not pleased. How's that?" He told NBC Sports Chicago when asked for his reaction to the scene, quote, "He knew better. Michael and I had some private conversations at that time that I won't go into detail on ever. But there's no question in my mind that Michael's feelings at the time was we could not put together a championship team the next year." Goes on to say that he has a good relationship with Jordan, that they hung out at an owner's meeting and the event down in Florida with him and Derek Jeter. But he goes on to say about the dynasty, "I asked Phil to come back. Phil said no. Michael said I won't play for anybody other than Phil. I met with Michael on the 3rd of July of that year, and I said to him, we're in a lockout. Who knows when we're going to play? Why don't we wait until the lockout is over, and maybe I can talk Phil into coming back? And he agreed. When the lockout was over, I still couldn't talk Phil into coming back. And the big thing is Michael had cut his finger with a cigar cutter, and he couldn't have played. So what's all this talk about bringing everybody back when Michael couldn't even come back?" End quote. Let's take the hypothetical, Reinsdorf continued. Scotty had Houston offering him a multi-year contract. You think he would have turned that down to come back for 1 year? I don't think so. Dennis Rodman had gone beyond the pale. As it turned out, he played 35 games after that in his career. Luke Longley was on his last legs. If we had brought that team back, they were gassed. Michael had been carrying the team. End quote.
Yeah, that's really good.
I think
good
it's
stuff.
Interesting that.
Yeah.
Well, he says it's flatly inaccurate that they didn't talk to Jordan. He even cites the date at which he talked to Michael Jordan and that Michael felt they would not be able to put a championship team together after the 97-98 season. So, I mean, that is in That is in direct conflict with what Michael Jordan said in that documentary.
So one of the two, here's what we got. One of them is lying, or one of them misremembers something. One of them has selective memory on something that was said, or maybe they miscommunicated at the time and didn't completely know how the other truly felt about something. But the thing that is biggest to me on this, on the macro, is it is just so damn Reinsdorfian to have this still being a source of tension years after the fact. Why it has to be that whether it's Bulls or White Sox, at the very top of the food chain, everybody leaves kicking and screaming. There never is a clean break. Even guys who remain under the employment of Jerry Reinsdorf are prickly people who are always on edge, always on guard. And at some point, don't you have to say this is the culture the owner has created?
The line from Remember the Titans, attitude reflects leadership, Captain.
Yeah, I think it does. And people who work in marketing and people who work in sales for those organizations, people I know have expressed to me that the walking on eggshells, approach is something that's a reality with their teams. So I don't know who to believe. It is so frustrating years after the fact, and not even the world's biggest Bulls fan by any stretch, to hear people so on different pages, and all the angst that it causes the true fans of the sport who were treated to 6 titles. So I'm not going to have a pity party for you or any other Bulls fan, Parkins, but you deserved a better conclusion than what you got. And I think you've heard a lot of debate too, Danny, about whether you let a champion, it's best to go out on top, or you let that, that's a matter of choice. There's no right answer to this. I've heard so many people explain that everyone's got an opinion, and it's cool. There's no right one, though, whether you think a great champion deserves the right to go out on its own volition or management should bust it up. There's really no wrong opinion on it for me. I think it's
so. Those quotes from Reinsdorf are interesting, and we will get into them more later on. But they are, just polar opposites, right? North and south, from what Michael Jordan said in that documentary, which again makes me feel like both of them should have been pressed harder for the actual answer as to how and why it ended at the end. And the end of it felt a little flat to me. Antoine Walker helped Michael Jordan come back the second time with secret workouts in Chicago. LeBron James was involved. Penny Hardaway was involved. Michael Finley was involved. Antoine Walker and Michael Jordan became very close. He's going to tell stories of that period of Jordan's life coming up next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.